Welcome back to the Tea Room with your lovely hosts, Palm Tea and Earl Grey. So for our 26th episode, we're going to be talking about mental health. And we have a special guest today by the name of Dr. Kathleen Isaac, also known as Ginger Tea. Yes. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So she'll definitely be sharing her thoughts on being a therapist, her background in health psychology, and also other questions that we have for her, we'll definitely be asking. So why don't you start off and just tell us like a little bit about yourself and like how you got into psychology and being a therapist.
So it started when I was really young and noticed that everyone would come and talk to me about their problems. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, this might be a good career for me. And I went to undergrad, studied psychology, read in a social psych textbook a little blurb about health psychology, mm-hmm. And got really interested in that. And I also have a personal connection in that I lost both of my parents to cancer when I was young. Oh, wow. If you talk to a lot of psychologists, there tends to be some personal kind of history that, you know, leads you to the field. And so,
right.
For myself, it was like knowing that, like, I could have used a lot of support back then that I didn't get. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to be that person for someone else,
right.
In the future. And so, thought about doing med school,
yeah.
Took bio, and was like, nah, it's not going to work for me.
Most people have that exactly. reaction.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Waiting out process at my undergrad. And so I was like, I'll stick to psych, and
right,
I can
right.
still kind of get the health stuff in
yeah.
By studying health psychology. And so got my PhD and did a postdoc to focus on like health psychology, like working with chronic illness and
right.
working with cancer, HIV and the like, and diabetes. And I'm here now.
Mm-hmm.
I work at an institution and also do private practice on the side.
Nice. That's good that what you studied, you can kind of see into fruition what you became. Because I know like for us, we know a lot of people who may have studied bio, but now they're in different things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's good that you kind of stuck with what you studied for, especially like with what happened to you, you know what I mean? So I guess we'll just dive into some questions that we have for you. So in terms of like mental health and people of color, do you think there's still like a negative stigma about people of color, like specifically Black people, what their thoughts on like mental health and wanting to seek a therapist? Do you still think there's that like that negative stigma?
I think
that.
We've come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot more awareness and interest in mental health,
mm-hmm.
And talking about mental health issues and seeking therapy. But we have a long history of a lot of stigma and resistance and
yes.
kind of staying away from there and like thinking that it's only for crazy people,
mm-hmm.
and I don't need that and I can just pray it away, or you're weak if you have to talk about your problems. And
right.
so I would say that, like, excuse me, it has been, I've noticed that there is just so much more interest now. But, you know, we come from a long history of, like, not seeking treatment. And I still see it. People will come into my room and they're kind of like, I don't really know about this. Like, should
yeah.
I be here? Should I not be here? And so I spend a lot of time, like, trying to... I talk to people about, like, you know, historically why,
mm-hmm.
You know, we haven't, you know, been involved, you know, in terms of, like, seeking our own treatment. And that comes from, like, you know, a history of, a history of people telling us that whatever, some behaviors are just, like, abnormal. So anything that deviates from the norm, whether that was running away from your slave master or homosexuality or
yeah.
different experimentation, things like that have, like, caused a lot of medical mistrust in our communities. And so it's hard to kind of break through that and think that people who, you know, are a doctor, you know, have your best interest in mind.
Yeah.
And so we kind of have to work through that.
Yeah, definitely. Because
yeah.
I feel like growing up, therapy was like the last thing. My mother especially would be like, oh, you know, you could just go to church, like, let's mm-hmm. pray together. It was never a necessity to have to seek outside help mm-hmm. to help yourself, like, within like my family,
even in a traditional sense.
So yeah.
my mother and her parents were very traditional,
mm-hmm.
My grandparents were from New York, their parents were European, but it was still not therapy was not the thing to do.
Yeah.
My dad was definitely more open to it, but I think his parents also, it would never be the first choice, would never be, maybe you should talk to someone. It would be like, work is going well, you know, keeping yourself busy. It would be it. It would never be, why don't you talk to somebody about what's going on? It would be like, everything's okay, getting through it. And that would be primarily the end of the conversation.
Yeah, I think we all want to seem as if like we're resilient, which we are. Yeah, and a lot of us have survived a lot of things, and like we want to be tough. And I think that like for a lot of people, what they do see is that like the people who were getting mental health treatment are like kind of like the most extreme cases or like severe mental illness. And so like you want to differentiate yourself like, oh, I'm not like that.
Yes.
And so like talk therapy or like just general wellness is seen as like more of a luxury. And it's something that a lot of people just don't have access to. People couldn't afford it. And so it's something that like rich white people in the Upper West Side get to do.
Yes.
And so like, they're like, you don't need that. Like, just go pray and you'll be fine. And so, yeah, now we're seeing that, like, it's really important.
Yeah.
And it's, like, you don't have to be, like, kind of – there's a range. And so, like, it can be from, like, maybe you have a really serious issue, like trauma or something to work through that you need assistance with. Or it's just, like, I just want to work on maintenance. Like I said, like, we go to the doctor, we go to primary care to just, like, check up and see if everything's okay. Like, why not do that with the therapist?
Yeah. And why do you think more – because you said earlier more people seem to be more open to going to therapists now. Why do you think that is currently?
I think we're talking about it more.
Yeah.
And so there are celebrities who have been, like, open about, like, being in therapy. And so, like – and I think social media has really, really helped a lot. And so they're just like different Instagram accounts. And now you can just share a meme that like says something about like, you know, they have like just different inspirational things or things about mindfulness that I think are helpful and really appeal to people. And like, it's really helped to spread the word.
Yeah. There are apps now also. I forgot. Yes. I see ads on Instagram a lot about apps where you, if you don't want to personally go in to speak to a therapist, you can just go on the app and they can talk to you. How do you feel about that
connection? I was going to ask if it helps or hurts you.
I think get therapy however you can get it.
Yeah.
And I do, I personally, you know, I think I'm biased to think that like sitting across from someone like that, you can't really compare like that kind of experience. And so I do think that that face-to-face time is very important. But I think that therapy, making therapy accessible to people in as many different ways as you can. Like, so for example, if somebody is, you know, they feel like they're better able to work if they just text someone or if they do it online because they just don't have, you know, it's more convenient for them. Like, why not? And so I don't know if I would personally do like text therapy, but like I'm open to like online though. So like I'll do that. Like I do like video therapy sometimes. And so, yeah, I do think that like getting more creative about like how we create access is really important.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a good point. In terms of another question, so you kind of answered this a little bit already, but I'm sure you have some patients who maybe were previously opposed to therapy. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, like, how are they now that you've worked with them? How have things changed in terms of their opinion of therapy? Or do they still feel kind of like, this isn't, maybe some people might feel, oh, it's not for me.
If the person comes back, sometimes someone will come for a session. They're like, I don't know how I feel about this. And you just don't see them again. It really, I think it's like you have to be ready. And I, something that I think is really important that I try to do in my work is to do like a lot of educating and like dispelling myths around like what people know or don't know or what they're expecting from therapy. Because I feel like you're going to come and you're just going to feel better, or that like it's always going to feel good. And it's like, oh no, like sometimes you might be going through it because we've uncovered something and like you're going to be thinking about it for weeks. And so like I find that like, some people, they're a little like cautious in the beginning. They're not sure, but, more and more, like, you know, they get more comfortable, like, the more they do it. And they kind of are like, wow, I, like, thought I would never talk about my feelings. And now I'm, like, more comfortable doing it. And now I want to do it with people, too. And so you start to see, I think you see people become, like, a lot more comfortable and, like, they stay. And people range in terms of, like, how much therapy they need. And so sometimes you might go, and if you have like a bad experience, then you kind of stop going. But then if you go back and like try it again and it's going pretty well, then like you might stay for, you know, some people are in therapy for years. And so,
yeah,
it really, you know, varies depending on the person. So I think it's like both personal readiness, like, and I think it's fit with your therapist. So you got to find somebody that you feel really comfortable with and who you are going to kind of like stick it out with to like kind of see through that process.
Yeah.
You said something that made me kind of think of another question. Yeah. So if you did have a person that you worked with for maybe 5 or 6 years and you felt like, okay, they've come a certain way, I don't, would you ever say, hey, I don't, or have a discussion with them of moving away from therapy when you felt like they've come to a place where kind of a better space, a more positive space? Or would you be like, okay, I'm encouraging them to continue coming? Because I feel like that's something I've always been curious about. Mm-hmm. I don't think a therapist would maybe say, oh, you don't need to see me at all anymore. Yeah. But maybe a, hey, right now it seems like we've come a long way. Maybe you can take a break or... Mm-hmm. Or what would that look like?
Yeah, my personal philosophy is like, I want you to get to a place where like you can manage on your own. Mm-hmm. I think there are certain like approaches to therapy where it's like, no, you can go for the rest of your life. Like, you know, it's a lifelong process. And but I really think that like, you know, if you're, people can get to a place where they're able to like function on their own and they also internalize like their therapist. And so like, they're like, it's like, I have a little Dr. Isaac in my head like, who's telling me this and stuff. Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, it's working. And so like, I would have a conversation with someone and say like, you know, you've made a lot of progress and like, we'll kind of talk about it together and we'll kind of explore like, yeah, what do you want? Or like, at different time points throughout my treatment with people, I'll like check in on their goals. Like, do you think we've reached them? Are there new ones? So that way we have like a shared conversation around that. And so whether it's just like limiting the frequency, like maybe you won't come every week, maybe you'll just come for a check-in here and there. And being flexible around that, I think is like how I would approach that.
That's good. And I like placing goals on them. Like, what is it that you want from this session even? So how do you know what you're saying is resonating with the person you're seeing? Because sometimes, you know, we do know people that go to therapy, but then it seems like they're resorting back to old behaviors that maybe their therapist is trying to get them to stray away from. So is it like an initial reaction, or is it something that they say that you know, okay, they're sinking in what I'm saying is marinating, and now they're applying it like to their behavior?
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just like silence. Like, ooh, I said something there.
Okay.
Or,
yeah.
Or yeah, sometimes it's like just body language or just their response. Like, and you can just see it. Like, you can see kind of the way that they talk about an issue. And I think it is hard sometimes for us to, like, measure growth and progress and kind of know if something really has something or not. Like, sometimes you think it does, but, like, therapy is an ongoing process. And so, like, sometimes you do backslide and, like, you thought you did, like, you made some progress, but then, like, you end up doing the same thing again. But it's, like, you know, you should be open enough to kind of come in and talk about that. But yeah, I think there's sometimes just like a nod, or like people will tell you, like there are times where you just see it like wash over and they're like, aha, I get it now.
Right.
Or they come back weeks later, like initially they'll be like, no, you're wrong. That's not it at all. And then like weeks later, they're like, you know what? You were right. And so, you know, just feedback. And I try to solicit feedback as much as I can to try to like get a sense of like, you know, yeah, where are we at with this?
Yeah.
Do you feel maybe if, for example, you have some, I'm always curious because even in my own life when I've gone to therapy and I've gone and been like, well, I kind of didn't do exactly what I was planned to. I was always curious, like after seeing her for a while, thinking like, is she feeling like, oh, what I'm saying isn't, not only is it not resonating, but is it, I guess I was curious, was she looking at it, was, could I have been doing more? Or was this, hey, Earl Grey's actually making an, like, regardless of whether I told it to her a billion times, how I presented it, she's just gonna do things on her own, and that's not something I can assist with. I guess I was curious about that.
It can be challenging. I think sometimes I can get to a place where it's like, all right, we're hitting like a wall here. Like, I'm trying. Yep. Like, we've been talking about the same issue and nothing's changing. And so for me, that's a point where I'm thinking about, is there something I could be doing differently? But also, what can you be doing differently? Like, I see therapy as a collaboration between the two of us.
Yeah.
Like myself and my patients. And so, I don't think it's fair to kind of have like a blame game, but to talk around like, yeah, what are the barriers? Like, what's getting in the way of you like making this progress? And so sometimes we figure that out, and it could be just like readiness, like you're just not ready, or like you're just, you say one thing, you're comfortable, but you're not, you're actually afraid to like do what you need to do to make that change. And yeah. So we could talk about that, and I don't have a problem kind of calling someone out and be like,
girl,
I like, what are you doing? Exactly, what's going on here? Why are we still here? Like, we could talk about this. Like, why did this change? And they're like, all right. But, you know, you don't want to shame anyone either. Yeah. Because I recognize that, like, it's hard to change. Like, we talk about it. Some things I'm always like, easier said than done. Like, we could talk about this all we want, but it's really, like, in the doing that you're going to see, you know, the results that you want.
Yeah, and kind of piggybacking off of what Ogre is saying, do you, even though you said it's hard to measure, do you give yourself, like, a internal clock when it comes to treating your clients? Like, okay, it's been 3 months and she doesn't seem to be as open, or he doesn't seem to be as open in telling me things that she feels I need to help her with. Mm-hmm. Is that when you kind of change your approach so she can be more open to you, or do you not have like a clock at all? Do you just gauge it by like case by case?
Yeah, there's no set clock for me. Yeah. I think it's on a case by case basis. Mm-hmm. And depending on kind of like where I'm working, because sometimes in private practice, I think I work a little bit differently than sometimes like in certain institutions, we have like session limits. And so well, if by, you know, like session 12, you haven't gotten it together, like, have to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think, yeah, I like in the initial phase, at least, like I want us to, you know, I'm just going to get a sense, like we're just starting out. But I do check in and kind of ask like, how is this going? And like, I do want to see if there is some change. And I do, for me, I think I recognize that like it can really vary per person. So it really is a case by case basis. Like there's some people who are going to be working through something and it's going to take them years.
Yeah.
And other people who come in and they're like so gung ho and they're like, I'm just working on myself. And they like, you see change like instantly. And like, that's usually like, amazing to see, but like not everyone's like that. And so it's really different. Just depends on like the level, you know, how severe the things you are. You know, the things you're going through or you're dealing with are for you, and kind of like what other things are happening in your life. Like sometimes you don't have the right support around you, so you're trying to change, but the people around you are still the same and encouraging you to do, you know, what you have been doing. And like that makes it harder. So
that's tough when you don't have like a solid support system around you, because then it's like, okay, after I leave this session, I'm still stuck with that same type of environment.
Exactly.
So yeah, that can definitely be a tough one.
I agree with that. I think also what I've learned is a lot of, obviously I have a great support system, I have great family, great friends, but I feel like at the end of the day some things are just gonna have to come from within. I think that obviously going to therapy and having your friends there, it's gonna help you and make things easier, but at the end of the day you are by yourself. And I think it's just learning to take the advice and the support from your friends and from your therapist, if you see one or another form of therapy, and using that combined with your own knowledge and just your own, hopefully, will to change and progress and make the best of that.
Yeah.
You're right. Because me personally, I don't go to therapy. Maybe I should start going to therapy. but I do like hearing like an unbiased opinion on situations that I feel like I need to process, because you know what, with certain friends, you know what they're going to say, but then it's just like, okay, I want to hear someone that's not in my circle or is not personally around me and doesn't know me from a hole in the wall. She's looking at me objectively like, okay, this is how I can help this person. So I do think it's important to have like that unbiased, you know, like bug in your ear, like, well, maybe you should look at things, you know, this way instead of like what your friends are telling you on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I always tell people, I'm like, it's priceless to just have somebody who's going to listen to you for 45, 50 minutes straight. It's your time. What friend do you talk to that's just like, all right, I'm just completely here? Like, you know, they're going to chime in with, oh, remember that happened to me too? Or like, you know, sometimes that's helpful. But like, sometimes you just need someone that's like focused on you. Like, this is your time. They're really going to help you figure out like what you have going on and how to, you know, how to help you figure out like where you want to go in life.
Very true. And we have another question for you. So going back to, I guess, how people receive mental health, do you see any like disparaging numbers between how people of color and people that are not of color receive help? Do you think like cost is the main issue, or do you think it kind of goes back to that negative stigma with mental health and like the history behind like people of color not wanting to receive mental health?
It's a combination of many factors. And so I like recently saw a stat where like there were like 8 percentage point difference between like a white individuals who seek therapy and like Black and Latino and like Asian is even smaller. It's like half the number compared to Blacks. And so there it's both like stigma and I think there's a lot around like just like lack of access. So and just limited resources around in terms of just like affordability and like now with insurance, like insurance doesn't always reimburse well. And so a lot of therapists don't take insurance. There are many who do, but in private practice, there are a good number of people who don't take insurance. And so like that can be a barrier. So you might not have the money to kind of shell out however much people are charging, you know, every week for therapy. And there are like clinics that are like lower cost, but they tend to be like they have long wait lists. And so like there are a lot of just things to kind of like trudge through like when you're looking for therapy. And so it's like finding something that like is the right cost and then like finding a clinician that's the right fit. And, you know, there's still, you know, while I think there's increasing numbers in terms of diversity of clinicians, in terms of clinicians of color, like we still have a long way to go. And so for minority people, you know, in particular, like if you're looking to work with someone who looks like you, there's not a lot of us out there. And so like we're either already booked. So like you call and they're like, nope, no openings. And so then you have to like try to find someone else. And so it can be a lot. And I think for people who are already kind of iffy about whether they want to start therapy, like when you do and you realize like, oh, it's not that easy to get, like people give up a lot. And I think that can be discouraging. And I'm like, you know, I try to be like, no, just keep looking and like maybe you'll find someone. But like it's hard.
What would be like for someone who's just starting out, maybe they really want to consider therapy and they're a woman of color wants to see also a woman of color. Is there a resource where someone could look, someone who's listening could look to try to see if somebody's available and for a decent price?
Yes. So there is a site, Open Path Collective, which offers like low-cost therapy and connect you to clinicians of color. I have a profile on Therapy for Black Girls. And so you know that's also a podcast. She has like a directory of clinicians on her site. And so, you you know, therapists join there so you can look there as well. I feel like there are some other ones coming out too. Like I'm forgetting the name, but there's like another resource too for where you can look specifically for a clinician of color. And also like within certain like Psychology Today is like a more popular one. I think you can search by like ethnicity. And so like that could be another way to find someone.
Cool. That's good to know.
Okay.
All right. Psychology Today. Why do you personally think there's like a smaller number of clinicians that are out there and practicing? Do you think maybe it's like the process of becoming a clinician or because I do feel there's like a bigger demand for people of color to want to see people of color in therapy.
It's, you know, education. We've just been making certain strides. But I think, like, this is the kind of career where, like, you don't always see the, like, reward initially. And so, like, for people of color in particular, it's like, first of all, we've had to fight through a lot just to even, like, get education.
Yeah.
And so by the time you get there, you want something that's worth your while. And so, like, a PhD waiting all those years. Like, I mean, that's what I would think about. So I think, like, just historically in terms of just, like, educational, systemic barriers, like, to getting people of color, like, into these programs. And sometimes, like, it's not like they're not applying, but they can be really competitive. And so, like, you look around, like, for example, when I went to school, I was the only person of color, like, color, no other group, just all white people and me in my cohort. And so, like, it was just like, where is everyone?
Yeah.
And I know there are people out there who are interested.
Yeah.
And I think so sometimes people don't even have information about, like, the different, you know, ways you can, like, become a therapist. So you don't have to, you know, I have a PhD, but you don't have to pursue a PhD. Like, there's social work, there's, like, you know, mental health counseling, like there's just a lot of different ways that you can do it. And so like just getting more information out there, I think would be great too, to like help us get more people, you know, who look like me.
Yeah.
To serve our people. Cause we are looking now and like we need it. And so I hope that more and more people like try to get careers in this field.
Yeah. We definitely need therapy as a whole. Do you have any, like, men clients that come to you? Or for right now, it's just, like, mainly women?
I tend to get a lot of women.
Okay, yeah.
From time to time, I do see men. The most now is, like, through couples work. And so, like, that's how I get my male clients. Like, But they're out there and they're looking too. But I think sometimes we do have like a gender preference too. And so like it's possible that, you know, people, black women are seeking another black woman. And maybe they're seeking males. And so it can really range. But yeah, I do see a lot of men through couples work.
Do you see any women who are not of color?
I'm just not curious. In my private practice. But in my other work, I do.
Got it. Okay. Do you find that? I was going to say, do you find that very different? Is that challenging for you?
I say no. The interesting thing I was thinking of as you were talking about is like something that does come up is that we notice that as like clinicians of color, people are more likely to refer you someone else who's like a minority. Because they're like, oh, you would want to work with them. They might not think of you initially like to send like a white client to you. And I think that's so like, in general, I think the people who seek me out for therapy tend to be people of color.
Okay, that makes
like,
sense.
They're like, because that's what they're looking for specifically. Mm-hmm. In my other work, when I work with, you know, non-POC clients, I don't find it challenging. I think like, you know, I can work with everyone. I push myself to even talk to them about culture too. And like, what are their cultural backgrounds? I like to get their feedback about what is it like working with a black person and like, we can talk about race too. And interestingly, I've been finding that like some of them do want to come in and like, especially in this climate that we're in, like they want to talk about like, yeah, the things that they're going through. They have questions around like, I'm uncomfortable with the things I'm seeing, like how,
interesting.
You know, they want to talk about their privilege. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And so like, yeah.
You're so like, all right, let's dive in.
Right? Because really, you don't hear that often. Yeah, let me talk
it's
about
exciting if people do want to talk about it. Yeah. Because there are things around like class too. And so like sometimes I can just use my experience as a black woman to connect with them around things that like maybe I haven't. I probably can relate to it in terms of like socioeconomic status, but like, I'm like, yeah, I'm poor too. So, like, yeah. I think it's for, I would like for every clinician to really be thinking about just like their cultural background.
Yeah.
And so, like, that way you should be able to work with anyone. Like, yes. We can, no matter what you're trying to do, like, it's always in the room with you because, you know, and some things you can hide and some things you can't, but like, it's important to talk about all of that.
Do you see therapy? Do you see a therapist?
Oh, yeah, I do. I wouldn't survive for the Netflix. Yeah. So, yeah, I have a great black man therapist
that
I love. And, yeah, throughout, it was funny because by the time I got to grad school, like, everyone else was in therapy, and I had never been in therapy before. And I was like, well, maybe this is something I should do.
Right.
It really helped, like, while I was in school, just, like, learning the craft to just, like, have my own support and to work through some of my own personal issues. Because what it helps with is, like, recognizing, like, sometimes, you know, you come and talk to a client who's dealing with the exact same thing you're dealing with or have dealt with, and you kind of need to, you know, have worked through it yourself so that, like, it doesn't get in the way of you being able to help someone else. And so, and also just, I'm a person too and have all kinds of struggles outside of work. And so, like, I need that support so that, like, I can be as whole of a person, you know, when I'm going out there to help other people.
Yeah, it's always important that the therapists have your form of therapy as well.
Oh, for sure.
In terms of, like, people that are non-color that you see, do you see that their issues are similar to people of color, or is it completely like different? Is it a case-by-case study? I'm always curious to know, like, I guess what white people come to therapy for. Like, is it more like stress-related with work, or is it like family or cultural issues, or as opposed to like maybe with a person of color, it might be more like a family issue or something that they're dealing with inside, like.
Here's what I'll say. I would say that, like, whether white, black, Latino, Asian, like, a lot of us are struggling with a lot of the same things.
Mm-hmm.
Family, work, like, just stress, anxiety, depression. So, like, I think across the board, people are coming. It, of course, is on a case-by-case basis, like, different variations of those issues.
Right.
What's different for a person who is a person of color is that, like, you have that, like, on top of all those regular stresses, it's, like, being a person of color, like, in this country. And so, like, to me, it just adds, like, a layer of complexity to the experience. But, like, we're all kind of coming in, like, life is just hard. That's why I tell people, I'm like, life is just stressful. So that's why we need therapy. And so, like, I don't think there's, like, a stark difference that I could say, like, between white, you know, clients and people of color clients.
Right.
I think, like, yeah, there's like a range of issues that any person could be dealing with, but I do think that like race and, you know, we haven't even talked much about like, yes, gender and sexuality and like those things kind of add a different layer of complexity to what people are dealing with.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And in terms of couples therapy, because me and Earl Grey always have questions of like curious about what couples would come into for. So is it kind of the same notion where it's like just a mix of problems or it's like an overarching issue? Like maybe it's finance, maybe it's communication. What do you find like, I guess, a common thread with your couples?
I would say the biggest thing is communication issues. I don't think they recognize always as the communication issue. So that's kind of what I hope to highlight.
Right.
I think like oftentimes like we think we're communicating well or like we're like, I'm telling you exactly what the issue is. Or we've been arguing about this thing for years, but they just don't get it. And it's like I see my job as like an interpreter. And so like everyone comes in and like they kind of share their viewpoint. And I try to push them to understand like when your partner is speaking to you, like, are you really hearing them or what are you hearing? And how, you know, and based on what you're hearing, how are you responding? And so like just getting them to like really understand that and understand like emotionally what's going on for them.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes it can be gendered in that, like, I think women can be more in touch with their feelings and men are a little more reserved and might not, you might struggle to communicate, or be responsive to their partner's needs. But sometimes it goes the other way. And people come in for like a range of issues. I see people who are married, there are people who are dating, either have been dating for a long time or a little bit of time and just trying to figure stuff out. But I really think like the main thing is like communication. And that's what couples therapy helps with. It's just like, sometimes you just need like a space to like actually sit and talk and listen to each other.
Yeah.
Like for real.
Yeah. It's typically the woman coming, like bringing the man in.
Actually, no, it really has varied. I've been lately I've gotten a lot of men like calling
who are,
me.
Really?
Who are the initiator.
Oh. Yeah.
And how long have they been like with their partners typically?
It's ranged. Like there are people who've been like maybe married for a couple of years. I had like, you know, one couple that had been dating for like over 10 years. And so, yeah, some of them have been together for a really long time.
That's interesting that the man is bringing the woman in. Mm-hmm.
Right? I would think that the woman would be like, oh, I need to bring this man in.
Yeah, because like you said, I feel like men sometimes it's like a prideful thing too. Like they don't want to feel like I have to go to an outside source to handle my problems. Like I'm like that. And we've had a conversation in our last episode about like toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. Is that like, I don't need help. Like I'm good here.
But I'm sure the man is a certain mature.
Of course, like, the men that are coming to see you, for him to even have the will, like, yes, I need help. Like, I need to bring my partner in this so we can talk about it. There's a certain level of maturity there.
Yeah. And sometimes it's the female partner who says, like, we have to go to therapy. If you don't fix this, like, I'm out.
I'm
and then
out,
they're
yeah.
like, all right, let me put in the work. And so they kind of task them to do it. Mm-hmm. Or I've had some men who are in their own individual therapy. And so that's how it comes out that they should go to couples. And so, yeah.
Interesting.
you're like, yeah. men in therapy.
Yes, they concept. Go. Yeah. They do go. I think one of the other questions, how do you measure success for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Especially you said earlier on, I know with the route you went in terms of your career, it wasn't something that initially right away maybe you'll get rewarded for.
Mm-hmm.
So how I would say, especially at this point, you've been practicing for how long now?
So I just finally finished all my studies in 2017. So I'm kind of new.
Still, okay.
So it's only been a couple of years.
How do you measure success for yourself?
I love what I do. So I feel so, like the minute I think even before I was done with school, like I my heart has always been in like my clinical work. And so like when I'm working with a patient, I see them get better. Or they tell me like, this has really helped, you know, like to me, that's success. And like, I guess like if I want to just get more specific, like, and for now, like I have a lot of goals for like what I'd like to do, but I do feel like, so it will come from like, not just like the number of clients I see or like how much money I'm making, which are some of my measures, some things I am looking at, like just like how am I successful financially, but also just like in terms of just like my long-term goals that I've set for myself. Like I have like smaller ones. So it was like, oh, upon graduating, secure a job, check. Like, you know, so like I have that like full-time job
and
then my next step was like, oh, maybe I'll venture into private practice. And then I did that. And so, like, it's like those, to me, if I, like, create, like, little milestones or, like, just small goals for myself and I reach them, like, mm-hmm. that's how I feel like I, you know, I'm successful at what I'm doing. And I think, yeah, the biggest measure of success for me is, like, how my patients are doing.
Yeah. It's nice so you can see, like, their progress yeah. in a way, and then that kind of reflects that what you've been doing and everything. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a nice feeling to have.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like they're graduating. They're like, oh, like, and, you know, like, they mark with you. They kind of, they'll talk about it. They'll mm-hmm. tell you, and if they don't feel like it's help, they'll let you know, too, sometimes. Mm-hmm, right. So, yeah, it's a really good feeling. And that, and sometimes you don't always get that. Sometimes people drop out of therapy before you, you mm-hmm. know. Or you're like, no, there was so much more work you could have done, but, like, they left anyway. And, like, that doesn't always, you know, it doesn't feel good in the moment. But I think what helps me is just, like, well, they were there. And for that small time that they, you know, I was working with them, hopefully it made a difference. And
right.
sometimes I just think you're planting a seed, even if you don't see it grow. Like, yeah. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, that I think that helps me kind of get through every day. Yeah.
And what advice would you give to someone who wants to seek therapy, but they're not, there might be, like, a little hesitant in, I guess, going that route? What would you say would be, like, the main benefits of going to therapy or a therapist?
Oh, just do it. Like, our mental health is very important. It's just as important as our physical health.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, no one else can take better care of yourself than you. Mm-hmm. And so therapy is an investment in yourself. And so, like, it's really important to take that time to just, like, yeah, find ways to work on yourself, get some techniques so that you can learn how to cope with your stress and, mm-hmm. like, manage your life a little differently. Like, we all have had some sort of experience. If you're going to live this life, you're going to go through something that kind of tests you and challenges you.
Yeah.
And it can be good to just, like, process that or at least be prepared to deal with that if you haven't encountered that yet.
And yeah.
Yeah, take that step. It's not easy. It's not always going to feel good, but it can help you in the long run.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is, like, figuring out what works for the individual in mm-hmm. terms of just managing things. Because mm-hmm. we all know that every day something's going to come, you know, or something's going to bother us or tick us off. And kind of I would say that for a long time, I think at first when I went to therapy, it was more like me talking. And I think when I got to a certain age, I was like, okay, take what she's saying and mm-hmm. then try to figure out how you can incorporate the teachings or lessons so that when you're taking a break from therapy, things are still manageable.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I got.
My form of therapy, what I've been doing is kind of creating audio notes for myself. So every week, if there's, like, an issue, I will record myself talking about it. And then the next week, I'll hear, like, play it back. And it's weird because then I can process what I was saying. And I will realize, wow, why was I so, like, emotional that day? Like, what was happening? And then I can kind of evaluate myself in a way. It's very strange. But that's, like, kind of my form of therapy because I don't go to a therapist. But yeah, it's kind of like me evaluating my emotions in a sense, like hearing what I'm saying and hearing the events of the day and hearing, like, how I process it. And then the next week I'm like, I don't even feel that way anymore.
I really like that. That's strange. A cool idea.
She's like, I'm going to tell it to someone.
Like, you're being introspective. It's like journaling, but, like, an audio journal.
Exactly.
Which can be really helpful. Like, sometimes just getting your thoughts out there and like talking to yourself or just, like, yeah, and I think that's what therapy essentially is. Like, whether you're doing it for yourself through, like, journaling or, like, kind of talking it out loud or doing it with an unbiased person who can, like, kind of reflect back to you what you're saying and, like, help you see it differently. Like, that's what the benefit of therapy is. But I think, like, finding different ways of just, like, caring for yourself. Like, and self-care looks different for everyone.
Yes.
But as long as you're taking that time to, like, just, like, look at yourself and, like, try to be more aware of, like, why do I do what I do? And, like, let me just understand who I am better and try to define that and change it if there are things I don't like.
Yeah.
You know, try to take those steps to change it. Then, like, you know, just make you a better person.
Yeah. I think I definitely need to go to therapy for dating because I'm wild confused already.
I'm sure a lot of us are, especially in New York. It's hard to do out here.
Yeah, I'm so confused every day. It's a new audio note coming tonight. Like, I don't know what do I do? I'm confused.
I was gonna ask. I'm sure dating is such a big thing that comes up for you. Yeah, I think that it's I would say I find that even speaking to a therapist, speaking to my friends, it's still challenging mm-hmm. because I feel like, for example, we'll touch on one issue and then I'll learn, okay, this is how you should kind of gauge this.
Right.
And then something else will happen. And then I'm like, wait, I'm trying to use some of the tools, but this is still something.
It's not working out. And then with dating, you can't, when you first are speaking to someone, you can't gauge how they're going to react. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard because what I'm learning every day is that no one is going to react the same way that you react. Mm-hmm. So you have to put that in mind that even though you may not get upset about this situation, that other person might, you don't know what's triggering that person. So I think that's the most difficult part for me with dating because you don't know another person's triggers. You don't know what they're insecure about. You just know that by talking. But if that person is not that expressive, then it's like I find out when they're like no longer talking to me or they kind of shut me out or they're being dismissive. So it's like that communication is not always open on both parties. So it makes it like so difficult.
Yeah, it's really hard. And you can't, you're not in someone else's
head. Yeah.
And, you just don't know. Mm-hmm. And I guess so many people nowadays are like, I was just ghosted. And it's like, it's so hard. Or I'm like,
it is.
Or they're like, I'm on these apps and it's a struggle.
And I know.
Like, yes, it is. So
it's a huge
trying
struggle.
To keep people encouraged. And it's interesting because there are also people who really feel like they should have it all together and I should be married by now. And I'm just like, where's all this pressure that we're putting on ourselves to have, you're looking, you see things on Instagram and think your life should be like that. And you see all the engagements and the baby showers and things like that. And you think that you're behind the curve. And
it's so true.
We just
went from a gender reveal yesterday.
And then you're like, where's my baby?
I can't even get the right guy. And she already pregnant. I'm like, okay. I'm like, you know what? Just relax. Everyone's time is different.
Exactly. Or you know what it is? Sometimes it's been a while since you haven't been ready to be in a certain place, and then you are ready. So you overlook certain things with that other person because I'm ready. So let's just make this work. And sometimes it's just not working.
Right.
And
you have to admit that to yourself. And it's disappointing when it doesn't work out. And so you work through that in therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I may need to make an appointment.
I think you should.
Do you want to do any scenarios or?
I feel like maybe we should do one. Did you want to do the one that I gave you the suggestion of?
Yeah, so we wanted to do a mini therapy game, kind of. I have a scenario that I know someone been through, and I guess we just wanted your take on it since you're a licensed therapist.
Okay.
So this person has a family member where she feels that anytime she tries to talk to her about anything outside of school or work related, that person is not that supportive or reciprocates interest. So for example, if she's like, hey, you know, if this person's like, hey, you know, I just started a podcast or I'm doing a new episode tomorrow, I'm really excited about it, their response would be like, okay. But if you're asking that person for advice about school related projects or
I got
a new job, or where am I, where should I apply to, or what networking event should I go to, anything that has to advance your career, this person seems to be very open. It seems like anytime you ask this person for advice, she's so interested in what you're saying. But when you're not, when you're just talking to her about your life and your interest and yourself, it's like she shuts off. So what would be your take on, I guess, why her response is like that and how
the person should go about dealing with that family member.
Yeah, because it can be difficult with family. You want your family to be supportive and to recognize all of you as an adult, not this little person anymore. I'm a grown person. I have my own interests that are different than yours. But it seems like once you communicate that, they're kind of shut out. They still want to have this big sister approach. If you're asking me about something I can help you with, sure. But if you're telling me about, I went on a trip or I'm doing this great show, I'm not interested.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the person, it's focused mainly on giving advice.
Exactly.
Not necessarily just being supportive and
just being an ear.
Listening.
Yeah.
I think if I was working with, whoever that person is, I'd be working with them on how do you communicate that to the family member?
Yeah.
And so yeah, sitting them down one day and being like, you're really great, you know, at giving me advice, and I really appreciate that. But I'm noticing that, like, yeah, what, you know, exactly what you said. Whenever I share, you know, whenever I just want to talk to you, like, it seems like you're not really there. Like, what's up with that? And, yeah, like, trying to explore that with them. Mm-hmm. In the event that the person, like, that conversation doesn't get anywhere, then, you know, we'd be working with the person on, like, well, like, you know, processing what that's like and how frustrating that can be, and, mm-hmm, like, maybe trying to figure out, like, sometimes I think we have to accept people's limitations too and know that there are just certain kinds of relationships we have with people. Mm. And so, like, you accept that, like, maybe this is the person I can go to for advice. And while I'm disappointed that, like, they can't be there, you know, in this other way, like, mm-hmm, maybe I can get my support elsewhere. And so, like, that might be helpful. But I do think the first step is communicating your needs and your feelings to the other person. Because we can have all kinds of feelings about it, but if we don't let them know,
right,
you know, maybe they didn't even realize that they do that. Or maybe there is some underlying reason that you might get to if you have that conversation with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
That is a good point.
Free therapy right now.
She's going to start charging us.
Did you have something or that?
I was trying to think of a scenario. Okay, I will give a good scenario. So, if I knew somebody who was in a difficult relationship, mm-hmm, like maybe not the most healthy relationship, and the person was trying to grapple with how to deal with whether she left that relationship, whether she stayed in it, and she kind of kept that separate from her friends. And one of her close friends did not agree with it, didn't want to hear about it, once the person knew that she was, like, staying, or she was continuing that, or she told the person, like, you know, I don't really want to be friends with you for a bit. Like, I don't want to be, this is the fact that you're doing, like, the fact that you're in something really unhealthy is putting me off, is turning me off. And, you know, I just have a certain allotted amount of energy and time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've tried to bring you to a positive space. Mm-hmm. And if this is something you continue at points, I am going to take my distance. Mm-hmm. And obviously that person got really upset. Like, you know, the person didn't feel it was a reflection of the friendship. Mm-hmm. How should the person go about it once they hear, like, someone is taking their distance because of their something in their personal life?
So we're talking about the person who was in the relationship.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How they should feel about it.
If one of their close friends is like, you know what, I'm going to take my distance while you figure out what's going on. Sorry, I'm talking a little bit with my hands.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, it's really disappointing, I think, because the friend, this person probably, you know, they already, hopefully they might have some awareness that the relationship they're in is pretty challenging and can be challenging for other people to kind around of figure them out how to, like, act with them. But I think one thing that, you know, might be helpful for that person to recognize is that, like, everyone has their own limits and boundaries, and, like, it might not be, you know, it's not personal per se in that the person is, like, trying to be, like, against you as a friend. It's just, like, they kind of recognize, like, what their needs are, and, like, they're saying that in order for me to kind of, like, continue to, you know, be okay, or, like, this is, I can't really watch you be in this because I care about you, I kind of can't deal with that. That's, like, that's a boundary that they're setting, and that you kind of have to respect that. And so, you know, I would kind of work with the person around, like, their disappointment around that, and kind of maybe understanding, like, yeah, well, you know, what's upsetting about that for you, and, you know, how can you learn to be okay with that, and, like, maybe talk it out if you do have the opportunity to try to see, like, yeah, how you can, you know, how they might be able to restore their friendship, you know, in spite of that. But, like, it just sounds like a boundary that the friend needed to set for themselves, and that's important for us to do. A lot of times we don't do that, and then we just become emotionally drained by trying to, like, fix someone else's problem.
Issues.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not helpful for anyone.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Sometimes we don't want to be Dr. Phil for everybody.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It could be a lot. It could be draining.
Yeah. Take care of yourself first so you can help other people.
Yeah. No, that's a good. So how do you self-care aside from going to your therapist?
It's a work in progress.
I was going to say, because you have to help yourself first.
Yeah, you have to help. It's exactly.
So yeah. I'm working on it. But yeah, I try to exercise and just, like, do things that, like, make me feel good. And so, like, my daily kind of self-care is just, like, coming home and, like, completely unwinding and disengaging, like, I'll, like, watch Love and Hip Hop or, like, something that, like, makes me feel, like, you know, I just need to, like, kind of just
mindless, right?
Mindless. Yes. I need very mindless to just, like, enjoy and be like, oh, this drama is just so much. So I do that or, like, you know, or, like, just taking care of myself, like, trying to get, like, massages here and there, taking trips. Like, I use my vacation days as much as I can.
As
and
you
so,
should.
And, like, I'm constantly trying to, like, figure out more and more ways to do that because I know that my self-care is really important because of the work I'm doing.
Of
like,
course.
I'm taking on a lot of people's problems and hearing about all kinds of things all day long.
Yeah.
And, like, it does take a toll. And so it's important to for me to keep finding, like, additional tools. But, like, yeah, mindfulness, sometimes just, like, yeah, making sure that I have people to talk to, if not just my therapist, but other, like, supportive friends and family as well. Like, I also try to make sure that I stay in touch with my loved ones so that, like, I can have enough people kind of loving on me. So that I can put some more love out there for
everyone
else.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
People always underestimate Love and Hip Hop as a form of therapy.
Oh, I love it.
I love when I'm having a bad day.
Pleasure, yeah.
When I'm having a bad day, I love to watch The Real Housewives of Atlanta or Love and Hip Hop because it's like, it's just mindless and it just makes me feel a little better about my life. I'm not that dramatic.
Exactly. I'm just like, and then, you know, like, some of it's so staged.
It
is. Like, oh, come on. That.
It's like, were you guys really there at the same time?
Exactly.
By coincidence. So,
yeah.
No, I love it. But yeah, thank you so much for.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Thank
so,
you for having me. This is great.
Yeah, this is great. So how could people find you if you know, if anyone out there, if anyone of our listeners wants a person of color as a therapist or just wants more advice on how to get their mental health, where could they find Dr. Kathleen Isaac?
So you can look me up, Dr. Kathleen Isaac. That's I-S-A-A-C. And I have profiles on Psychology Today and Therapy for Black Girls, as I mentioned. So you can kind of hit those two and you'll get me. You could probably Google my name also and find out where I am. I'm working on having my own website and other stuff. So TBD. But for now, those are the two places where you can find me. I have profiles up on there.
Great. Thank you. It was super helpful. Anything to close out?
I think just for the listeners, if you're interested in getting mental health or just like preserving your mental health or trying to improve it or want to seek a therapist, definitely don't be afraid to go to therapy.
I would say definitely seek it out. And I think what's really important is that, like, your therapy is for you. And so listen to yourself also. Like, while I think on one hand it can be, like, challenging, and so you kind of do have to see it through and give it a fair shot before you decide, like, how you feel about it. Fit is also really important, and so, like, if you go see someone and they say something that doesn't sit right with you, or you feel like, I don't feel comfortable with this person, don't be afraid to, like, seek someone else out. Like, sometimes you have to see a couple people
before you find the right person.
And so, like, don't just go to one person and be like, therapy ain't for me because I didn't like that person. Like, that, don't let one person be a representative of what therapy is, because we have a lot of different clinicians with a lot of different personalities and
that's a good point, especially for people who are afraid. They may already be hesitant or have, like, a negative connotation with therapy, then they go to one person like, oh, it didn't work out, I told myself so. But I think that's great advice, like, to not take one person as the overall, make that your overall experience of
therapy.
That's a really good point. So thank you again for coming.
Thank you.
And thank you for our listeners for always being supportive, whether you're commenting on our Instagram page, whether you're playing us on SoundCloud. Please continue to support and share your thoughts on this episode. So if you haven't already, please follow us on Instagram, the Tea Room Pod. Subscribe to us on iTunes. We're on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Facebook, the Tea Room Podcast, and also you can play us on SoundCloud.
Keep sipping.